Hi, I'm April Preston, and welcome to the Wellness Edit with Holland and Barrett. As part of our Food That Loves You Back series, today we're going to be discussing women's health. And I'm delighted to say I'm alongside three times best-selling author, Dr. Hazel Wallace. Here's what's coming up.
We're lumping in women's health with words that we think shouldn't be kind of safe to expose to everyone. Mm. And I think that then limits what we can share and it limits how we can educate women on these really important topics. For many women, the only conversations they've really had was maybe at puberty, maybe some hushed conversations with your mother and your friends, but it's not really something that we're openly talking about. So the thing about going through the menopause is we have a huge drop in estrogen, which is an incredibly important hormone, not just for menstrual health, but also it's really important for heart health, brain health, skin health. It's a wonderful hormone. Compared to men, women are twice as likely to experience anxiety and depression in their lifetime. If you're the type of person who's finding your symptoms so debilitating that you're using your annual leave or you can't get out of bed, you're stuck on the floor because you feel so unwell, that is not okay. That's not normal.
I'm absolutely delighted that you've joined us here in the studio today, Dr. Hazel Wallace. Now, I know lots of our listeners will know all about you, but there will be some that don't. So could you just start by giving us a bit about you and your background and how you got into the field you're in?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a medical doctor. That's my kind of like what I've trained to do. And along the way, I retrained as a nutritionist. Mm-hmm. Because of my interest in the role of nutrition and our overall health. I'm also a trained personal trainer and an author of three books. My most recent is The Female Factor, which came out last year. And that's all about women's health, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and you're absolutely spot on. We are here to talk about women's health and what a broad subject it is. And we'll get into some specifics, particularly menopause and periods. But before we do that, just do you think there's still a lot of stigma around women's health, or do you think we're making progress as a nation?
I think we are making progress. I think there's a lot more conversations happening related to women's health. And that's fantastic because it does then remove the stigma to a degree and makes it less taboo to talk about topics like menstrual health and the menopause. But I do think we've got a lot of work to do still. You know, a lot of my work now is centered around women's health and discussing things like the menstrual cycle. And even on social media, those terms remain censored to a degree.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in that a lot of the words or a lot of the content related to that may be shadow banned. So not banned or removed in the sense that it's being deleted, but not shown to audiences.
Right.
And so we're lumping in women's health with words that we think shouldn't be kind of safe to expose to everyone.
Mm.
And I think that then limits what we can share and it limits how we can educate women on these really important topics because, you know, for many women, the only conversations they've really had was maybe at puberty, maybe some hushed conversations with your mother and your friends, but it's not really something that we're openly talking about. And even within healthcare, it's something that we're not really putting as much attention or funding towards.
Should we start by talking about the menopause? You're absolutely right. It hasn't been talked about as much as it should and for many years. And I'm sure there's many of our listeners that won't be familiar with some of the symptoms. I wonder if you could share some of those with us.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting when it comes to the menopause because we don't learn that anywhere apart from when we get to that age or we see our mothers or our aunts going through that. But women will spend a third of their life in the menopause. So that's a huge chunk of life where there's so much left to live. And so we should be really supporting women during this time. In the UK, most women go through it at an age of 51, but the average is between 45 to 55. So, you know, if you're in that age category and you're starting to experience symptoms, it's likely that you might be going through perhaps the perimenopause, which is the period before the menopause.
Right.
And we call the menopause the time after, so 12 months after your last period.
Right. Okay.
So it's basically just a moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, you would be postmenopausal. So the most obvious symptoms would be initially you tend to get quite erratic, irregular periods, and then they stop completely. But you might also experience things like low mood, irritability. You might notice skin changes, brain fog, tiredness, there's mm-hmm. quite a multitude of symptoms that you could experience. Yeah. And so the more we kind of talk about these things, the more awareness we can bring to it, and women can, you know, seek help if they are experiencing mm-hmm. really kind of intense symptoms, be that like hot flushes or brain fog.
Yeah. And people might get any combination of those symptoms, I'm assuming. You don't necessarily tick all the boxes. You might have one or two.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We all know some people who just sail through the menopause yeah. and don't experience any symptoms. But then there's some people who find them really debilitating. Mm. There are things we can do. So if you are struggling, do speak to your GP mm-hmm. Because you could go down the route of HRT if that's mm-hmm. not suitable for you. Mm-hmm. There's alternatives as well. And then there's also things we can do in our lifestyle that can help yeah. ease symptoms.
I was going to ask you about that because yeah. this podcast series is all about top tips and dispelling myths and whatever. And I think from the list of symptoms you've described, if somebody hasn't gone into perimenopause or menopause yet, it might feel a bit overwhelming. You've mentioned HRT, but what are some of the lifestyle changes you could make that will really support you and help you through that?
So the thing about going through the menopause is we have a huge drop in estrogen, mm-hmm. which is an incredibly important hormone, not just for menstrual health, but also it's really important for heart health, brain health, skin health. It's a wonderful hormone. Mm-hmm. So when we lose that, we have knock-on effects. And one of the most important things is that we have see an increase in the risk of heart disease
right.
and also weak bones, so mm-hmm. osteoporosis. So we, even if you're not experiencing symptoms, you need to start considering your kind of your risk factors for those things. Mm-hmm. The good news is healthy diet and also physical activity can help with both.
Yeah.
And also they can help with menopausal symptoms as well, like okay. hot flashes. So you don't need to get too bogged down about X, Y, and Z nutrients. Thinking about having a healthy diet.
Yeah.
So that would be something in keeping with the Mediterranean style diet, which we hear about all the time. Mm-hmm. Lots of colorful fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. oily fish, healthy fats, and limiting things like salt, saturated fats from kind of red and processed meat. Mm-hmm. And thinking about also our activity levels and making sure that we're moving on most days of the week.
Yeah.
And then when we think about how we can use diet to support menopausal symptoms. So if you're someone who's suffering with hot flashes, for example, mm-hmm. we did mention that HRT can be helpful there for some women. But also there's some evidence that certain kind of dietary changes can help. So, for example, there's a type of plant compound called phytoestrogens, mm-hmm. and it's kind of mimics natural estrogen. We can find it in foods like soybeans, but also in chickpeas and peanuts and a certain other category of foods. And so there's some evidence that if you're consuming 2 to 3 portions of this per day, mm-hmm. this may help with those symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's also hugely beneficial in your diet anyway. Yeah. So if you want, just include them. And you can find soya in things like soy milk, but also mm-hmm. things like tofu as well.
Okay. I mean, obviously, we want to try and encourage people to eat whole foods as much as possible. But things like nut butters, would they be appropriate if you're trying to get your phytoestrogens as well?
Yeah, nut butters are great. And again, they have lots of healthy monounsaturated fats, mm-hmm. which we love, really good for your heart. And nuts in particular are extremely healthy for your heart. Yeah. So if you can get them.
We've talked a lot about nuts in this series, actually, and certainly about variety as well, and getting more plants and lots of variety in that. Just in terms of, you mentioned exercise, are there certain types, should you do weight bearing? Should it be high intensity? What sort of things are we talking about to really support somebody through the menopause?
That's a really good question. And I'm a big believer in all movement counts. So mm-hmm. if that's gardening or shopping or, you know, walking the dog or running after the kids or grandkids, that all counts. But when you go through the menopause, like I mentioned there, your bones are at higher risk of becoming a bit more weaker. And that's because we don't have estrogen, which is hugely important.
Yeah.
And osteoporosis is more common in women than men, although it does happen in men as well. And one of the most impactful things you can do is doing exercise that's weight bearing.
Right.
So swimming wouldn't count. While swimming is great for your heart, it's not exactly great for your joints and your bones. Mm-hmm. So you want to be doing things like walking, lifting weights, if that's something that you want to do, doing weight bearing exercises. Also things that include jumps or hops are really helpful as well, mm-hmm. because they stress the bone in a good way.
Yeah.
If you want to kind of take your walking to a next level, perhaps you're involving stairs or you're doing hiking where you're requiring to use a little bit more energy and a little mm-hmm. bit more impact. And mm-hmm. that's really important for your bones. My mum's in her 60s now and she loves cycling and walking, but I'm always trying to encourage her to like do that weight bearing yeah. exercise. And I'm like, you're not too old to go to the gym or yeah. not too old to start. So it's really important that you're thinking about how you can strengthen your muscles and your bones yeah. during this time.
Sorry, I'm smiling because I've got images of me skipping when I take the dogs out.
You can
I shall
skip.
Add that in. Yeah. We've talked a lot about the physical symptoms of menopause. What about some of the more emotional sort of mental strain of going through that? Are there any top tips you can recommend our listeners from that perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. So compared to men, women are twice as likely to experience anxiety and depression in their lifetime. And we see certain periods of a woman's life where she's more vulnerable. So premenstrual, postnatally, and also when you go through the menopause. And we don't really understand why some women experience this, why some women don't. And it seems to be that some women are more sensitive to that drop in hormones.
Right.
But also we need to remember that during that period, and for some women, the menopausal transition can be quite long.
Mm-hmm.
Other things are happening in your life. You might be dealing with aging parents. You might be dealing with divorce. Your children are moving out, empty nest syndrome. So we have to kind of look holistically at what else is happening.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is going through the menopause also is associated with an increased risk of sleep disturbance and insomnia. Yeah. And there's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario there because that can also have a knock-on effect onto our mood and our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you do practically speaking? Well, if you're really struggling, always speak to your GP. But kind of at home, you can start thinking about how you can optimize your sleep. If you're struggling with hot flashes, thinking about the things we mentioned from a nutrition perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps it's, you know, cooling the room by turning off the radiators, yeah. tapping the window open. What we see is also a link with depression and also social support. So if you're really struggling and you don't feel like you can confide in your partner or your family, maybe joining a group of women who are also yeah. going through the same thing, or just joining like a walking group or something where it gets you active and you can focus on something else. Physical activity as well is really important for mm-hmm. our brain health and also our risk of depression. So
yep.
trying to stay active for that reason as well.
I want to talk a little bit now about menstrual cycle and periods. The first thing I know I get asked a lot is, you know, when you're on your period at that time of the month, should you be changing anything about your day-to-day routine or do you just carry on as normal? Any top tips from that perspective?
It really depends. Similar to the menopause, some women go through kind of menstruation or the period without really any debilitating symptoms,
mm-hmm.
Which is fantastic for them. But there's some people who really struggle with symptoms, be that cramps, bloating, heavy periods. There's, you know, a multitude of symptoms that you could be experiencing. If you're someone who's in that category, there's a couple of things that you can do. So thinking about how you can reduce your stress levels, not always something that's really easy to do, especially because we're all in a kind yeah. of busy working environment, but maybe you're just kind of reducing the amount of social commitments you're doing in that week and trying to get into bed early and doing all of those things that really help you feel grounded and relaxed. Nutrition can help. So focusing on an anti-inflammatory diet. So mm-hmm. anti-inflammatory foods would be, again, things like the Mediterranean diet, colorful fruits and veg, nuts and seeds, whole grains, herbs and spices.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because menstruation is an inflammatory process.
Right.
And so we're releasing a lot of inflammatory markers and that's what causes the cramps. It's what causes the heat and the pain. And so if we're supporting that with the diet,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to get rid of your cramps completely, but it may help ease them to a degree and just help you kind of like heal and regenerate ahead of the next phase of your cycle. There is some evidence to say that exercise can help.
I was going to ask you about that because sometimes it's the last thing you feel like doing.
Absolutely.
But can it help?
It can help. And it seems that all intensities of exercise can be helpful. So even if you don't feel like doing something that's high intensity,
mm-hmm.
getting out for a walk, doing some yoga, because exercise in and of itself is quite anti-inflammatory
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of benefits to it. So it can like also increase the blood flow blood flow to your pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of benefits there. Again, like I always say this with the caveat that some women really find it quite debilitating during this time.
Yeah.
And so they might be listening to this thinking, well, I don't want to exercise and all I want is chocolate during this time. Mm. So you have to kind of see what works for you. But I would say if you're the type of person who's finding your symptoms so debilitating that you're using your annual leave or you can't get out of bed, you're stuck on the floor because you feel so unwell, that is not okay. That's not normal. Mm. And definitely speak to your GP, because I've come across too many women who've just felt like it's part and parcel of being a woman, and it's absolutely not.
Well, that's giving us lots of hope. Yeah. I mean, personally, I've found through the menopause and before when I was going through the menstrual cycle, cold water swimming really helped me. And I've got a lot of friends that do that. Oh, is there any truth in that, or is that a myth? Is it because it can help with the inflammatory side? Or
well, to my knowledge, there's no studies on cold water swimming and the menopause and menstruation. There may be, but I think because it's very like anti-anxiety inducing, I can imagine that it would benefit you in that way.
Yeah.
Heat is what we tend to recommend.
Mm-hmm. Hot water bottle.
Hot water bottle or the heat patches you can get in pharmacies are, you know, they're recommended even in our guidance. That can be really helpful, or like a warm bath. But for some people, they might find cold water swimming really relaxing.
Yeah.
I have a friend who has used it. Like, she's talked openly about her mental health, and cold water swimming has been instrumental in like giving her kind of something to look forward to each day and a little bit of stress, but in a good way.
Yeah. So not necessarily evidence-based, but keep trying things until you find what's right for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I love that. Whilst we're talking about myths, if you like, what's the biggest myth surrounding either menopause or the menstrual cycle that you hear and you think that's just not right?
Well, I think what we just mentioned about, because menstruation and the menopause are normal, common experiences that women will go through, I think we've normalized women's pain and also suffering related to these conditions. And so some women feel like they can't speak up if they're struggling. And I've seen this both in my personal life, but also professionally and with women I speak to on social media, in that we normalize, you know, really debilitating periods or taking time off using your annual leave just because you're on your period every month. Like, that's not okay. Or women struggling going through the menopause because they don't have women in their life that they can relate to and speak to about it. So I think we need to normalize talking about it, open up these conversations so that women know what's normal and what's not.
Yeah. Okay, that's great advice. I'm going to come on to another question on that in a minute, actually. I just wanted to get your view on either, again, menopause or the menstrual cycle. Are there any supplements you would recommend, or is it all about the diet and the exercise?
I'm food first approach type of nutritionist, I would say. But there are certain situations, there are supplements that can help. For menstruation, if you're struggling with cramps or PMS, there's some good evidence for magnesium. What I would say is that the research here is extremely limited, and this is across the board in all of women's health.
Yeah.
I think in the next couple of years, we'll probably understand a bit more when it comes to evidence of supplements.
Mm-hmm.
For the menopause, there's really less evidence there. There's some supplements that you can try. But again, I would start with the food first approach and then see how you go. Like, you know, some women want to go down the route of taking soy supplements, for example. Mm-hmm. Not suitable for everyone. So it's always worth speaking to someone in store with your pharmacy to make sure that it's suitable for you to take.
So we sort of mentioned that, you know, we're making progress. There's a long way to go around some of these topics. And you've talked about normalizing the conversation, if you like. What else would you like to see really change to get us into a better place on women's health generally?
Well, I think in England anyway, we're making progress in that we've just appointed, well, last year, 2 years ago, our Women's Health Ambassador. And there's last week, we've just launched the Women's Health Survey to gather more information about women's experiences in the healthcare system when it comes to kind of reproductive problems. So that's a really positive step. I think in terms of funding, we only allocate 2.5% of our public funding towards female reproductive health, which is astonishing when you think about the amount of women who suffer from PCOS, endometriosis, all of these conditions that we really don't know very much about. So I think we need to push more funding towards that, like we mentioned, having open, honest conversations, and perhaps like educating more health professionals on the impact of the menstrual cycle and the menopause and even pregnancy, and what we can do to support women during these more vulnerable stages of their life, be that nutrition, exercise, and stress management.
I think there's some great advice there. So really, you know, people can control a lot. Women can control a lot through their diet, their exercise, their approach, but also be much more demanding of getting support from various different professionals. I love that. I mean, it's such a broad topic, women's health, isn't it? We've barely skimmed the surface today, but there's been some great myths that you've busted and top tips that you've shared. I always like to finish by asking my guest what their favourite meal is, not related necessarily to women's health, but just genuinely interested.
What
do you like to eat
meal?
Best?
This is such a hard question because I always think about my death row meal and what would be my final meal. But what I like to eat more regularly, I love Mexican food. So something like a Mexican bowl, maybe with some like some kind of like cod, fresh vegetables, some nachos, brown rice, some salsa, delicious. Guacamole. That would be my kind of like, I need something nourishing, but also really Moorish.
Yeah,
that would be something I go for.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, Dr. Hazel Wallace, thank you so much for your time today. I mean, I could sit here and listen to you all day and pick your brains, but certainly I've got some top tips to go away and make changes in my life. So hopefully our listeners have too. So thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
That's all for today. A massive thanks to Dr. Hazel Wallace for her time and all her top tips. If you've missed any of our other previous episodes, you can check them out now on the Wellness Edit podcast channel. Topics include sleeping and the immune system. We're also available on YouTube. Just search for Holland & Barrett for all the highlights of our previous episodes. We're back next week for our final episode of the series, and we'll be chatting all things gut health with Dr. Megan Rossi.